All right, everybody, welcome to our next episode of the Phoenix Rising Podcast, where we focus on the comeback from a setback. This episode, we're going to be talking specifically with the heartbeat behind the scenes of the firm, which is going to be the legal administrative team. We've got Christian, we've got Jennifer, we've got Savannah, and we've got Grace joining us today. So we're going to start off with Christian and Jennifer, and really kind of talk about what you guys are doing behind the scenes of everyday basis. But it's really hard work that I don't think people really fully understand. So you have to be somewhat dedicated to the work, right? So let's start off by talking about how you got into the practice of law and the things that keep you going into the practice of law, because it can be hard.
So I decided to go back to school for a paralegal degree because it's nothing exciting. I was working retail management. I had small children. Obviously not ideal. Working holidays, working weekends, working nights. My mom, in her post children being at home age, went and worked for a law firm, and she loved it. So I literally was like, accounting or legal, legal studies. Went with the legal studies.
Thank God.
Yeah, you know me in math, which I used to be good at. But got into it, enjoyed the classes. I worked at a different law firm for 10 years doing something I wasn't super passionate about. I came over, began working with Sean. My passion really grew because it was a different area of law where I was able to help people and actually see a difference in what I was doing, whether it was directly working with the clients or working behind the scenes, helping the firm grow processes and procedures, which in turn did help the clients. So that's kind of what drives me now, the helper aspect of the firm.
Yeah, I know. I know you personally, and you are a tremendous helper in your mindset. You always want to be helping everybody. So, let's talk about that drive. Where's that drive to want to help come from?
I think for me, it's just internal. To actually think of where it comes from, maybe it's also the way I was raised. My mother was a helper. They have this saying, it's called like that somebody has a servant's heart. Obviously, they're not a slave or a servant, but they really like doing things for people. I think, that is one of my drivers. I want people to be better. I want people to be successful, and I want to know I'm a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Christian? What got you started into, wanting to explore? Because I know that beyond being a paralegal right now, you're looking to explore to go to law school eventually, too.
I am, yeah. So I got my bachelor's in biochemistry. And at college, I was really involved with student government. I was actually the president of student government at Lemoyne College. And so that kind of got me interested in pursuing law in some capacity. And so after I graduated, I started as kind of an administrative assistant at a small firm, and then moved here and doing more a paralegal role with personal injury law. And yeah, so I'm really interested in paralegal work, but also I see it as kind of a stepping stone to getting to law school. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's super great. And we're going to talk with Savannah in a little bit, who is a law clerk who is going to be taking the bar this summer. So you're going to be on that same type of trajectory, just a little bit different. So
sure.
I love that. But what made you want to say, I want to become a lawyer? And at what point did you say, that's what I want to do?
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm dedicated to being a lawyer. I just want the legal experience. I know that can open up so many opportunities. And yeah, I mean, I love helping people. I've always been kind of, I don't even know.
Just a helper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell, like, you've only been with our firm for a short period of time, but you're very intelligent. You pick it up quickly. And you can tell that you're a true helper to see what the end result is. You're, mm-hmm. I would assume that you're probably pretty good at puzzles because it seems like that you're a pretty good puzzle maker and you want to be able to see what that whole thing looks like.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I think at the end, the more knowledge that you have, I think that you feel more competent, and with the more competent comes confidence. Mm-hmm. Right. Do you guys have any client stories of advocacy that just sticks into your mind, whether it was at your former firm or this firm, that kind of really stands out for you?
Yeah, I have a recent case I'd like to talk about. This is actually a Second Amendment case that we worked on. Our client was barred from buying firearms for mental health reasons. Former military, I want to say he was a ranger, honorably discharged. He was mismedicated by his physician, which caused him to go into delirium. And because of that, he lost his privilege of owning firearms. That's how something, no fault of his own, that's how we thank our veterans, and this happened. So we had to go through the process of filing an application with the Office of NICS and SAFE Act, and it wound up being a lot more than we would have thought it would be because his application was lost. So we really had to push to have it expedited. His wife was a wonderful advocate for him. She still will reach out to me through our client portal. And just knowing we were able to help him and how happy he was, how happy his wife was that he got this second chance to, exercise his Second Amendment rights, and the results, but also the relationship that was built with him and his wife during the very long process.
Yeah, and it's got to be so hard when you serve our country, mm-hmm. you go through the things that they've gone through, and then you have, you're told you can't honor guns. That is just crazy to me. And granted, some people should not have guns.
Yes, of course.
But in situations like that, that's crazy. And it just warms my heart to hear those stories. And, whether he even uses his ability to use the guns is irrelevant, right? It's about having that right. And so thanks for sharing that. What about you, Christian? You got anything?
Yeah. So I'm, I haven't really seen many cases to completion. But I will say there's a current sex abuse case that is just heartbreaking, and working on that case has been so motivating to try to get these people, the money that they deserve, at least get something in return for the pain and suffering that they've experienced. That has been not only motivating, but also it's a really gruesome story of what these people experienced.
Yeah.
And so I'm proud to be working on something like that, and something that feels really meaningful.
Yeah. And I know we will talk with Brady in another episode, who is working on that case. And that case has kind of brought the firm together as a whole in defending what happened to those children, which is unacceptable. Now, that brings up another point, is that advocacy in situations like that, right, can be really, really, really hard. Not for the individuals. The individual advocacy is super easy, right, mm-hmm. in situations like that. But when we're talking about cases that involve DWI, Jen, I know that you did years. You worked with clients that had DWIs. How do you keep that level of advocacy going for somebody that's made that mistake, had that lapse in judgment, and made that?
Sure. I think there's several ways I've always looked at that cases, those types of cases. A, I believe it's everybody's constitutional right to have a, proper defense. But beyond that, they're human beings. So many of them actually have addiction. We are not just defending them in court. We're trying to get them the help they need behind the scenes. All our clients, have to go get an evaluation for drug or alcohol substance disorder.
For which, if it recommends treatment, they would need to obtain the treatment to go along with that.
Yeah. But speaking of meaningful cases, there was one time that Dennis and I did have a client who did have a legitimate, it wasn't just a lapse. it's a lapse in judgment, but he had a legitimate substance abuse issue. We picked him up from jail and drove him directly to his inpatient bed at one of the local facilities. Yeah. So it's doing stuff like that, you know. And again, I think that helper thing comes out because I know, speaking to these clients after they've done the inpatient, they're different people.
Yeah, we've talked about that several different times, that it's really hard to do the things that we do, you know, whether it's me as the CEO, you as the paralegal, Dennis as the attorney, another as the attorney, whoever it may need to be, because there is such a negative stigma to representing those charged with the DWI, right? And the truth is that there are, one, people that are innocent, right? Like, people forget about that fact, right? But two, and we've said that from day one on the Phoenix Rising podcast, is that we're not advocating for the things that they've done, mm-hmm. right? We're advocating for the individual. And for some individuals, it's addiction. For other advocates, it's a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean some of the mistakes aren't more severe than the other mistakes and there should be consequences and all that. That's nothing remotely close to that. But having an attorney that is also your advocate for you, I think is super important. And especially on the civil side where Christian works, is that you're dealing with, there's a lot of different types of practices, right? There's a lot of practices that, you know, will get you a quick settlement and move on, right? And that's not the type of firm that we are at, right? And I've heard some people disparage those type of firms. And the truth is that, and I take a step back and say, even though that's not who we are, that's okay. Because those individuals in those car accidents or in those situations, they may need that money quicker than what some of our clientele can be. When advocacy gets difficult, what do you guys do? And when I say when advocacy gets difficult, when a client gets rude or a client doesn't listen to the recommendations, what are some of the things that you will do to continue to be an advocate for that individual?
Take a deep breath, first of all. They're people. I try in the back of my mind to remind myself why I'm doing it. I know they're going through stuff. It may even be more than what we see. So I always try to remind myself, like, there's stuff going on. It's not me personally.
Yeah.
It's what's going on with them. It's
yeah.
them, not me.
Yeah.
And it helps me push through. I mean, also, that only happens in a small percentage of,
yeah.
you know, cases, clients.
Yeah, it's true, because when you're dealing with not even necessarily addiction, because I don't want to make it sound like all of our clients that, you know, we have are addicts. That's not the case whatsoever. But people have shit going on in their lives, right? You know, they may have an issue with Dunkin' Donuts, right? Which creates them to have affect their morning meeting, right? So it's all of those things that we have to be able to kind of pull the mask over, right? But at the same time, we're humans too, mm-hmm. right? We have bad days too. So Christian, what do you do when you're in those moments where you're having a bad day and you know you're having a bad day? What are some of those type of things that you do to?
Yeah, so any kind of stress relief technique really works, taking a walk, that kind of thing, kind of start off, as Jen was saying. And I think also just having a conversation with the attorney, I think, is really important, kind of just laying out what's going on, what the client is doing or is not doing, and kind of trying to advocate for the clients and raise it to the attention of the attorney, I think, is really important. I think also remembering that, you know, clients, like as Jen was saying, clients have things going on that you don't know about. And so just keeping that in mind, I had one client recently who didn't, was delaying getting something notarized. And so I was trying to offer them, hey, there are e-notary services available. There are, you know, other options. Let me know how I can help. So trying to reach out with other possible solutions.
Yeah.
With just, hey, I'm here for you. Let me know how I can help. I think can really go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. And for me, it's about setting expectations, right? Like, I don't want customers disrespecting my staff. Right? That's not going to be okay. It's never going to be okay. That said, I will give them the expectations that we all have bad days. Shit happens, right? So I'm going to give you a pass here, but we're going to set the expectation of what we're going to do differently in the same situation, right? Because I think setting that expectation is crucial, because we're not going to be the result of complaints because clients just want to. Like, that's not going to be okay. And I've actually had conversations that, you know, in our core values, in our mission vision, we always talk about our people, our community, and our clients. And it's done that way intentionally, right? Because I believe that's how true advocacy comes across, is if you're focused on your people, taking care of your people, then what happens is then they can take care of the community. And if you're taking care of your people and they're taking care of the community as a result of it, then taking care of the clients is a natural result of that. But I think it's important to set those expectations too. What are some things that, as a paralegal, legal assistant, that you do that most people may not even know that the paralegal, legal assistant does?
I think a big aspect of the job that people may not realize is the amount of administrative kind of work that you do, the amount of just keeping tabs on, you know, where this matter is, or, you know, has the client gotten back to us about that thing, or, you know, it's a lot of just kind of case management. To an extent that I didn't realize it was going to be when I got when I started as a paralegal. And so there's a lot of work involved behind the scenes, even, you know, behind even just the behind the scenes work that has to happen. Even before that, just kind of keeping track of statuses and stuff is a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure.
I think people would also be surprised to know how much we actually manage the attorneys. And I'm not saying that disparagingly.
Yeah.
We're the ones keeping them on task.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people hear the term attorney, you know, they think the Juris Doctorate degree, and they think, oh, you know, obviously they've got it together, which of course they do. But the fact that we are, you know, assisting with their calendars, like I said, keeping them on task, that allows them to focus on the law.
Yeah, that's a really great point that you point out, Jen, is that I think that with our firm, we have a lot of administrative help, right? A lot of administrative help. And we do that intentionally so that the lawyers can focus on the law, mm-hmm. right? And if you talk to any sole practicing attorney that has any level of caseload, I'm sure that they will gladly tell you what they're doing on an administrative level, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the things that they're doing on a daily basis on an administrative level, a lot of it is not going to be client-facing. And it's not going to be pushing their case forward. It's going to be calendaring. It's going to be making sure that their case is moving forward. It's going to make sure that all of the things that are pushing the case forward are being done on the case, right? Which is what the paralegal, legal assistant, law clerks are doing. And I think that, to Jen's point, when people see a lawyer, you know, they see this amazing vision of what a lawyer is. And there is a lot of amazing things that lawyers do, but the magic would not happen if it wasn't for the paralegals, legal assistants, right? They essentially make the attorneys look magical, in my opinion. And then the attorneys take it over from there, and then they do their magic from there. How do I phrase this? Is there anything that would make you want to say to a client that we're no longer representing them? Is there a point where that is a conversation?
Yeah, it's happened.
Okay, tell me about that.
And it the conversation itself has never really happened, but when we get to that point, it's because of lack of communication on the client side. We need X, Y, and Z. We're reaching out to them through our client portal, through email, through telephone, leaving them voicemails, mailing them certified mail. We're going months.
Yeah.
That's when it gets to the point, like, we cannot provide them the best defense if they won't even
respond. that's exactly where I was getting at. So thank you, Jen, for saying exactly what I wanted you to say without you knowing what I wanted you to say. Is that's the key. When we have a business that's so focused on advocacy, right, and second chances, we will do that every single time, right? But again, there needs to be a level of advocacy. And I've told people in the conversation that I've had with them is, if you're not going to return calls, if you're not going to return the paperwork that's needed, then it probably doesn't make sense that we're moving forward, because it's affecting our ability to represent you, right? It's affecting our ability to advocate for you when you're not able to get us this type of paperwork. So it's all about expectations, right?
Yeah, I think our letter that we send out, like, it's called a welcome letter. The first letter we actually send out to the client says, we are a team, not, you know, with the client.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need them to help us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Is there anything else that you would want to discuss about second chances in your roles?
I'm not sure.
It's okay. I mean, we went through a lot. The big takeaway that I want viewers to really see is the hard work that it takes to be a legal assistant paralegal. Like, you could be doing one thing, and then you've got something else coming in, and you got something else coming in, and next thing you know, you're just juggling it, mm-hmm. right? And you have to do it most of the time with a smile on your face and with the client coming into there. So there's a lot of things that goes on behind the scenes. So I thank you both for what it is that you guys do on an everyday basis to make us great. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. We're going to go to our next segment, which is going to be Savannah and Grace. Well, welcome to segment two of the heartbeat behind the scenes, the paralegal. So with us right now, we've got Grace Trapasso, who's a paralegal in the firm. And we also have Savannah. Savannah is a law clerk who is going to be studying for the bar pretty soon. So she's going to be an attorney. But she's been doing a lot of paralegal work for us. So I think it's really important to have the conversation. So welcome, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
You got it, Grace. Hey, Grace, I'll have you go first.
Great.
You share with us some of the things that creates the reasons why you are a paralegal, got into the business, and what drives you?
Yeah, sure. Originally, it starts back when I was a freshman in college. I went to Ithaca College. I originally started out in the film and photography school there and loved the photography part, wanted to be the next Ansel Adams. It was all about black and white landscapes, right? Then I got into my first film class, and I'm filled with, you know, future Tarantinos and Spielbergs. Realized it wasn't for me. I always, like I think most people, law fascinated me. I watched SVU, listened to the true crime podcasts, you know, all that stuff. I've also always been one of those people where if you tell me about a subject, I'm going to research it to the umpteenth degree. Yeah. I want to find out everything I can about that. So I met with one of the advisors and I told them what I was interested in. And they're like, we think you should transfer to the business school and get a degree in legal studies. And I was like, yeah, that literally sounds like it's perfect. So I transferred to the business school. I got a degree in legal studies and communication studies. From there, it was May 2019. The whole world shut down in the next couple of months. The plan for me was always to go to law school, but I realized I'm like, I think I want to take a while and get some work experience. So I became a paralegal, and that's my background.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love that. And I think that, you know, you said something in there is, you know, you wanted to become you thought about becoming a lawyer. You're still thinking about becoming a lawyer. and you want to get some real life experience first.
Right.
I think that's so smart because I think a lot of people go into, I want to become a lawyer so hard and so heavy, and God bless them. But then they become a lawyer and they're like, shit, what now? Right? And then they lose their passion for the reasons why they originally wanted to do it. So going in there, getting that experience now will allow you to make a more informed decision of what you want to do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I also just, I mean, I know people who went through law school during the pandemic, and I think they're really badass people. I was like, I have to be in the classroom.
Yeah, you're too studying. Much of a people person.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What about you, Savannah? What are some of the things that brought you into the law? Your perspective is going to be a little bit different because, like Christian, the goal, I mean, you're too, his, that's a goal for him. For you, you're already on that path. It's beyond a goal for you. What brought you to that?
I think a lot of it was growing up, my best friend's mom, she was an attorney, and I always looked up to her a lot. She didn't do criminal law exactly, but she was like our mock trial coach. I did mock trial in high school. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed standing up in court, public speaking, advocating, making arguments, you know, kind of ripping the rug out from people. I found a lot of enjoyment in that, honestly.
Yeah.
And then I went on and I continued to do mock trial at my undergrad in Geneseo. And I also interned in back home, the Shenango County Court. And the judge that I interned for there, he was a triple hat judge. So he did surrogates court, family court, criminal court. Mm.
And kind of experience.
It was amazing. Yeah. And I am forever grateful for that because that made me realize, like, the days I'm most excited to go to work here are the days where it's the criminal calendar. Like, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what interests me the most. So I got to college and I was immediately like, okay, I'm going to do political science because that's the average law student's undergraduate degree. Which, for the record, you do not have to do. You can get a degree in literally anything and go to law school. But went for political science. And from that point on, I knew I wanted to go to law school. I knew I wanted to be attorney. I knew I wanted to do criminal law. And then I spent some time in the public defender's office back home. And I was like, yeah. And I actually had done it to rule out defense.
Yeah.
I thought that I was going to want to prosecute. And being in the public defender's office for a very short period of time, I was immediately like, no, this is where I want to be. I'm too empathetic to be on the other side of this. Like, I care about people. I see people in my personal life make mistakes. I know everybody makes mistakes. I do believe everybody deserves a second chance, and I like the ability to be able to help them and guide them through that experience and be able to support them through it as well.
Yeah, super powerful to be able to kind of go through the life experiences, whether it's an internship, whether it's life experience with friends, to be able to come out and say, this is what I want to do, right? And now, you know, you're on that path, and I can attest that you're doing a great job on that path.
Thank you.
We did a trial prep 2 weeks ago on a case, and it was great. It was great to see you interacting and getting that experience and all of that. So you're on your path to be a phenomenal attorney. So, but I think a lot of the reasons why is because you have that base, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you look at some lawyers out there, and there's a lot of really not great lawyers out there, and if you were to have conversations with them of why they became an attorney, the reasons are not what you just outlined. And that's what makes it different for me. It's their dad wanted them to be a lawyer, or, you know, my dad was a doctor and I didn't want to become a doctor, but so I went and became a lawyer. All of those factors that kind of go into that. So talk to me about what you guys do when advocacy becomes really, really, really difficult for you guys.
I'll go first. So I think one thing you always have to keep in mind is when clients are difficult, you have to think, this isn't about me. How they're reacting, what they're going through, like, you're a third party to it all, essentially. You're not having that lived experience of getting a DWI, going through the arraignment. I can walk you through it. I know what that is. But experiencing it firsthand, I think sometimes makes people really emotional, and it makes them, you know, upset. Like, whether, you know, they're looking at jail time, they're looking at a criminal record, it's affecting their job, their family, whatever the reason is. I think sometimes, you know, it makes a lot of emotion. So I always try to lead with, this isn't about me.
Yeah.
And how can I help?
Yeah. Really, really smart, because it's not about you.
Right.
Right? And that's what people don't understand. It's like, well, you did this. It's even though they're using the words I or you, it's not about you. Right.
100%.
And that's why we do a lot of work, and why I think it's important to give the paralegals, legal admin, attorneys as many resources as possible to overcome when those moments happen, right? Because you're dealing with people that are either losing their children from a family matrimonial situation. You're losing somebody that, like Jen talked about, is you losing their gun rights, that was a ranger in the military that did things to protect us.
Right.
You're talking about people that have made a mistake, got a DWI, and then now they can't take their granddaughter to the dance that they wanted to take to them, or take them to dinner and do those type of things. So it's not about you, right? You're guiding them along the way. So I want to be able to provide as many resources to you all as possible. One, including emotional intelligence. And I want to give Grace a huge amount of kudos, because she's put a lot of time, effort, and work into that. And I want to talk about that for a second, about what that journey was like to you in a place where you're having to kind of relearn all of those behaviors, and what has emotional intelligence done for you?
Sure. First of all, thank you for that. I appreciate the shout out there. So emotional intelligence was something I had never really heard of until I came here. Prior to working for this firm, I was with a solo practitioner doing high-level felony cases, like murders, assaults, high-level drug cases. And while, you know, I love true crime, that sort of entertainment is, you know, great to me. In reality, it takes a toll on you.
I'm sure.
It takes a toll on you. I mean, waking up at 3 a.m., like, thinking about cases and just not managing the stress, I think it really took a toll on me. So when I came to the firm, I think I had some awareness. Like, I'm really good at feeling people's emotions out. I'm definitely, like, a people person.
Yep.
But managing my own emotions was something that I really wanted to improve on. And luckily, the firm, you know, gave me the foundation, gave me all, like, the tools in the toolkit to get there.
Yeah.
It's something I still work on continuously. You know, whether it's counting to 10, taking a deep breath, going for a walk, you know, laying on the floor of your office, you know, and just being like, can we listen to music or something? And just like resetting, whatever way, you know, I see that day, like, you know, that's what I need. That's what I'm going to pull out. Yeah. And it definitely has now made me be able to manage a higher caseload, more difficult cases. It's allowed me to work on bigger projects, you know, within the firm to improve the firm.
Yeah.
It's also just helped me in my personal life, too, with just my relationships outside of work. I mean, it really did change my life.
Cool. That makes me happy. Happy for you. And for me, I've always said that emotional intelligence is increasing our capacity.
Right.
Right? You know, rather than having those moments where we're arguing with someone in our heads, which we've all done, right? those moments go away.